I don't wanna go to work. I just wanna chill and play all day. Look him dead in the face and say, I wish I could just be still asleep while you work.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Jobs Blow podcast with Brianna and Josh.
The podcast for dreamers with and without day jobs.
That's us. You see, we're so glad to be here sharing more inspiring stories as well as perspectives on surviving life and career in, during, around, and now still during a pandemic.
But it's now a summer pan. It's now the summertime and the pandemic doesn't feel so bad anymore, right?
It doesn't.
And actually, this show will be old, but today New York announced we're open for business, baby.
We are, except the Delta variant's coming through town. So everybody better get their vaccinations or else, it's supposed to be pretty bad, the Delta.
Well, and I have to say, like, I don't like to pay attention to the news, but every time I look at the news, I don't have any desire to leave my apartment.
Yeah.
I mean,
very weird.
These flights with these crazy passengers, I already don't like to fly. And and seeing like flight attendants flipping out, trying to open doors.
The lesson is constantly keep your phone filming because you're likely to get some good footage of people just freaking the fuck out on
you. Well, but did you see the latest one? They got on the intercom and were like, any able-bodied people, please come to the front of the plane.
No, really?
Like, I heard that, I would lose my mind.
Wait, during the flight? No,
yes.
I didn't hear that one. That's wild.
Yes.
Well, I'm more concerned about the variants, because they're saying that the vaccine like is just so good against all the variants. But these variants, speaking of which variants, Loki variant. OK, we can talk about that in a second. But also they're just like acting quicker and they're more contagious. So it's like, you know, I just hope, because now we got to worry about the kids now. You know, if it's more variants, you know, all right, now it's like, all right, do we have to get them vaccinated now?
Well, Ella is vaccinated.
Well, she's old enough, but mine aren't. Yeah. So I said today, I was like, I think we're going to do it as soon as it comes out, because these variations keep coming out. Who knows how bad it's going to get? So
yeah.
Fearmonger. That's me. Anyway, I'm excited about the Loki series that just came out. I know we talk about that all the time. So now we have the third MCU TV Disney Plus show out. Did you see it yet?
We just started Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Oh, that's a whole other tone right there. Yeah. You like it?
We're only two in. So
okay. It's a little slow at first. It gets better.
It is a little slow. It is a little slow. And it was funny when they introduced the Captain America.
Yeah.
I was like, I know that guy. You know who it is?
Yeah. It's Kurt Russell's kid.
Yes. Yeah. And Goldie Hawn's son. I was like, how do I know that kid?
It's going to really bites you around episode five. It's when it really starts pulling on the heartstrings. It's awesome. But the first four are just a little slow. But Loki's dope too. So.
I love the superhero bridge segue, because our guest today is a bit of a superhero, a bit of a Wonder Woman. My quote for today, in honor of our guest, is my inspirational quote, but it's really not so much inspirational as just badass. But the quote is, I will fight for those who cannot fight for themselves. Ooh. And that is a Wonder Woman quote. And
because
what I used to say about my junior staff at every agency I ever worked at, right. I will fight for those who cannot fight for themselves.
Which is why you don't have a job anymore.
So exactly. Exactly. So anyway, today's guest comes to us through a previous guest, Alan Locker from The Locker Room, but also from Twitter, because that's how I found her. Via Alan, but today's show is called The Voice of a Prince with voice, film, and television actress Susan Eisenberg, aka the voice of Wonder Woman. So welcome, Susan, and thank you again for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. I know Alan was our go-between, which was brilliant.
Yes. No, I actually, though, did see, I think I posted about him being on our show and you liked the tweet. And I was like, well, who is this? And I looked at your information. I was like, Alan, you know this fantastic woman who's Wonder Woman? Holy shit.
Half of the guests we get on the show are from Brianna just stalking people who like our posts. So thank you. Congratulations. You're here.
Hey, listen, I mean, Twitter's been like, it's just introduced me to so many people. So I, you know, if we can find each other there, I think that's brilliant.
That's it.
So, Susan, did I describe your job title correctly? Is there anything you'd like to add or subtract?
You know, I just say voiceover actor because I think that just sums it up. You know, I think most people know me through Wonder Woman because it's probably the most well-known thing I've done. But then there's a lot of other work with voiceover. There's promotion, there's commercial voiceover, there's narration. And I do all of that as well. But I think what I'm most, when people invite me to Comic-Cons, it's because of Wonder Woman and not because I did a Fancy Feast commercial.
It's usually the case. Is there a specific Wonder Woman film or TV series animated that you did that stands out among fans that people immediately go nuts for?
The Justice League and Justice League Unlimited. Those are the two. I mean, that really introduced, I've been told that really introduced a lot of these characters to a generation of fans. So right. If you're of a certain age and you didn't grow up with Linda Carter or Super Friends, you probably met, you know, Wonder Woman and Martian Manhunter and Superman and Batman through the Justice League series.
Right. What years did that air?
So we premiered in 2001 and we went off the air in 2006 and we did a couple of years of just the Justice League. And then we did expanded the universe and did Justice League Unlimited, which just blew open the doors to all these other superheroes, that hadn't been paid attention to that much. And now they were on our show and fighting the good fight alongside us. So it was exciting for the fans and it was a brilliant, brilliant show.
And it really kind of puts you up there with like Kevin Conroy, who's been the long-term Batman and Mark Hamill, the long-term Joker, because, you know, there weren't a lot of incarnations live action of, there weren't any of Wonder Woman, one attempt at a TV series. And then obviously recently with Gal Gadot. So you're really like that voice, like you said, of a generation of Wonder Woman fans. So it's very cool. Do you feel like the love that way from fans or just in general?
I do feel the love from fans. I do. I think since we started to go to Comic-Cons all those years ago before social media, I think that's when you discover how fans feel about you. Because they tell you their story. They tell you how they started watching and that they would run home from school and watch it on Cartoon Network or that you helped them through a really bad time in when they were younger. So the fans very much tell us that they were part of, that we were part of their childhood. That's something I get told all the time and it never gets old.
Right. So when you go
and now, of course, the social media, you know, social media just like, you know, exploded all of that. So like now you can talk directly to the fans, which is brilliant.
Better.
So when you go to Comic-Con and, you know, compared to a lot of the people there who, they are, their actual physical presence they identify with the characters they're playing, but your voiceover, like that you still get the same kind of, like they know who you are.
Not like there's not the recognition that a live action actor would have. And that's fine because if I wanted that kind of recognition, I think I would have pursued a very different career. I was always more comfortable, as you can tell from this interview, I was always more comfortable in front of a microphone than I am in front of a camera.
Right.
So I'm really okay with people not recognizing me. But of course, when you're at a Comic-Con, you're at a table with all the pictures of the characters you voiced behind you and with a big name tag in front of you. So people right. know who you are. And I think now with social media and other things, I think people do know what I look like and, you know, they know they can recognize me, but I'm not going to be going to the ladies' room and people like going, oh my God, it's Susan Eisenberg. I don't get that.
You're probably, okay. And that's probably a blessing in a lot of ways. Quite.
Oh,
honestly.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Do fans ask you to say iconic lines like in their voicemail or like, you know, leave my friend a voicemail? You know?
they, you know, not so much the, not so much the fans, but there were, there used to be times where I would be at a recording session and, you know, maybe the engineer or the voice director would say, hey, okay, this is going to sound weird, but, and I have left a few, I have done a few of those, but, you know, people do ask for lines just when you meet them because there are a few that are iconic and, you know, and I always tell people to turn around when I say the line because I don't want them to be staring at me. I think that, you know, takes away the magic. You want to like just close your eyes or turn around and just listen and then you'll see their expression on their face when they turn back around and it's like the recognition's there. But I think if they're looking at you, especially when parents bring their kids over and they'll say, you know, this is Wonder Woman from the show we watch on Justice League. And, you know, you can see the kid trying to figure it out and it doesn't make sense. And that doesn't look at all like Wonder Woman. I don't understand what you're saying. Well, it's funny. And then, of course, if I speak, then they make the connection.
It's funny you say that because my kids watch DC, like the Teen Titans and the Go Teen Titans Go, whatever. And they love it. Right. But they know they're 7 and 4 and they watch it all the way through the credits. So they know the names of all the voice actors, right? Oh, that's and the director and this one and colleague. So it's just funny because, right, they would never know who they are if they walked into a room, right? But they know, oh, he does it in this one and he does it in that movie too. And also in that, it's just really
well, I introduced my daughter to Elsa, Idina Menzel. Yeah. At a party and she was like 5 or 6 and she was like, I was like, this is Elsa. And my daughter was like, what are you talking about? Uh-huh. It's not Elsa.
Yep.
Wait, so let's backtrack a little. So I know you are from Rhode Island, correct?
Mm-hmm. I am.
Okay. So why don't you take us on a little bit of a journey from Rhode Island to LA where you are now and maybe just talk to, like, where did you go to college and, you know, some of your first jobs and.
So went to college in Washington, DC and also in Israel. And then worked in Boston for about 8 months after I graduated college. I was working for a magazine and the big question came, are you going to stay with the magazine or are you going to go to Los Angeles and try your hand at acting? And my mom and I talked about it and she said, you know, you have to go because you don't want to be 50 and say coulda, woulda, shoulda. And so I packed up and I flew to Los Angeles and I didn't know anyone here. And I always refer to that as like the last truly brave thing I did in my life because I still can't believe I did it. And, wow.
And how old were you at that time?
So I'd graduated college. So I was probably 21.
Okay.
I think I turned 22. I turned 22 shortly after I moved out here. Mm-hmm. So 22.
Wow.
Were you thinking this is going to be a year? Were you thinking I'm here, I'm just going to do this until it happens?
I don't even think I had those thoughts of like a timeline. You know, I think people, my parents probably had a timeline in their mind, but I didn't have one for me because I was flying blind. I mean, I just didn't know even what I was going to do. Mm-hmm. But you know, you do have like a couple of phone numbers when you move out here and you know, you figure it out. You take acting classes and you meet people there and, you know, you look at the classifieds and, you know, the Hollywood Reporter you look for work there. It used to have job ads. I don't know if it still does. I don't read it anymore, but you know, all these things. And so, you know, slowly but surely you cobble together, jobs. And all my jobs when I first started were working as an assistant to people. So I worked in casting. I worked for directors. I worked for writers. I worked for agents and managers. And it was extraordinary.
Were you studying voice acting or any kind of acting in Israel? Where'd you go in Israel?
Tel Aviv University.
Was it writing? What were you studying out there?
Acting.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So you're out there and you're working, you're doing all these jobs, which is courageous. I mean, did you know any, did you have any friends out there? Where were you living? Like,
you know, I made friends. You know, there were a lot of people like me who in 1987 decided to move to Los Angeles and were my age. And one of the first jobs I got was at Disney Studios. And I met two people there that I'm friendly with to this day. So you meet people as you go, because so many of us were transplants from other parts of the country who came out because of big dreams.
And right. Susan, so when how long were you there before you really started to feel some momentum in the acting?
Oh God, it was a very long time. I mean, I was very lucky. I forgot, you know, I went to school in New York City when I graduated college. I forgot that part because I attended the Academy, American Academy of Dramatic Arts, for a period. And then I went to Los Angeles. And it took a really long time to feel momentum, but I was so lucky in that everywhere, not temp jobs, because the temp jobs, they don't want you doing other things. But when I got other jobs, working for directors, working for management, working for casting people, I was very, very lucky in that people knew I wanted to do voiceover and they were very kind. So if I worked on a TV show as a writer's assistant, they would write me a line in the show and I'd get to do voiceover. Or if, you know, I was just very lucky. I was working for a director and he knew I wanted to be an actor and he put me in his movie and he got me into the guild, into the Screen Actors Guild.
So you feel like that's a good way to go as far as like you made it known that that's what you wanted. You were speaking, you know, your desires out loud.
I did. But, you know, I mean, not that it would get in the way of the job itself, because obviously your employer doesn't want to think you're, you know, just wasting time and until you get your big break. But they did know that I had other aspirations that, you know, a lot of these jobs come and go. I mean, you are on a show and then it gets canceled.
Right.
So you're looking for a new job. So you start a new job, you're working for a casting person, the show gets cast, the movie gets cast, you go on to something else. I mean, it's a freelance world. And so you're just, you know, going from gig to gig. And in those gigs, you know, you can certainly, I've certainly told people what my aspirations were.
And you were leaning more into voiceover than acting. Like when I
came out here to do on camera, but the interesting thing is I worked for a director named Lamont Johnson, who was an angel, and he put me in his movie, got me into the guild, and he would let me read with all of the actors when he was casting the movie. And then he put me in the movie. So I had a part in it and it was utterly terrifying. I mean, I have to say it was, not only did I know all of the crew because I was the director's assistant, but I mean, it was my first acting gig and it was beyond scary. Now, some people would say, well, I fell in love and I knew from that day forward that I was meant to do on camera. And I didn't even know the camera was there. Well, that wasn't me. I knew the camera was there and it made me self-conscious and it terrified me. And when I was in high school, I used to do radio commercials for my dad's business. My dad had a department store and I did, he and my sister would write the ad copy and I would do the commercials and that felt natural. So after recognizing that on camera wasn't going to be my bread and butter, I decided to go take some courses in voiceover acting specifically at UCLA. And that's when I started to get serious. Still couldn't support myself doing it, but that's when I was like, okay, I know what my path is going to be here. I'm going to do voiceover.
Were people ever more encouraging one way or another? You know how you hear sometimes people like, oh, your voice is so great for when you'd be such a great voiceover actor. People say that all the time. You know, I mean, were people saying that to you, or was it just something that you kind of like felt natural for yourself?
I did get that a lot. I was on the phone a lot with people because I was an assistant. So, you know, part of my job was being on the phone, making appointments, talking to people, setting up schedules. And I did get that a lot. I got it enough that it made me realize, okay, you have to look at this. What's going on here? Maybe there's an opportunity here. Mm-hmm. And if I did love the acting part of it, I just didn't like the camera part of it.
Right.
So
you do have that soothing voice that, you know, did the Salvation Army, right? Didn't you do their ads?
I did.
You do have a very like calming, I don't know. You have a very nice voice.
It's funny because, thank you very much. I'm lucky enough to be in a new show called Masters of the Universe.
Yes. I wanted to talk about that. I'm so excited for that. Sorry.
It's very exciting. And
tell them who you're playing. Tell them who you're playing and who just tell them everything about it. You tell them.
The Sorceress.
Yes.
And Kevin Smith is, you know, directed me at all the sessions and,
right.
you know, it was my first time working with him. And he, you know, he's really extraordinary. He's like a real, just a tremendous director and a huge cheerleader for all the actors and just makes right. you feel like a million bucks. And he said to me the other day during the session, so do you ever raise your voice? Because, your voice is like the most calming voice I think I've ever mm-hmm. heard.
It was
so funny because I said, you know, Kevin, you can ask many people in my life that yes, indeed, I do raise my voice. It doesn't always sound calming. Trust me.
But when does it come out?
July 23rd, the show premieres on Netflix.
It's so dope. It's going to be so great. Full, what is it like? Full season. It's like He-Man back. I mean, all these.
Yeah, it's very, voice it's very actors. Exciting.
And Sorceress was amazing.
He-Man? Who's playing He-Man?
You know, I can't think of the gentleman's name right now, but he's amazing. I should know his name.
Well,
I can tell you.
It's Chris Wood. Chris Wood.
Thank you.
You're
Chris
welcome.
Wood. And I can tell you that Skeletor is voiced by Mark Hamill,
right?
Oh, wow.
Who you must have worked with on, right? On Unlimited or Gods of, you know, on, right. The Justice League, right?
Yeah, I did work with him. I didn't know him well then. My relationship with Mark has only blossomed through social media because.
Oh, he's amazing on social media. I love him.
What's interesting too is Kevin Conroy, Batman, is in the He-Man.
Yeah.
And Lena Headey and Justin Long. There's a lot of big names. Alan Oppenheimer. I mean, there's Alicia Silverstone.
Alan, who was the original Skeletor. So right. It's like that's Kevin, because Kevin has such a deep appreciation for history, and he always respects it. And right. he pays so much deference to it. And it's I didn't know that world at all when I got hired for the job. Right. I didn't know who the Sorceress was, so I had to like dig into YouTube. She's so cool. And you know, I'm just giddy that I get to be a part of it.
Whether you read it or not, I'm sorry, whether you realize it or not, the movie, they've been trying to do a live action movie of He-Man for forever, and they can't get it off the ground. So on top of, yes, this coming out and it being Kevin Smith, who's the ultimate, you know, nerd fanboy director guy, and then all these big names, this is going to be huge. I mean, as big as Wonder Woman fandom type stuff. I'm just letting you know that before you want to leave your house when this premieres. Okay.
But again, it's voice.
I know. I'm just saying, although your voice, there are some parts in some of the Wonder Woman films that you've done where you are raising your voice, where she's like mad.
Oh gosh.
She's
angry.
So, I mean, I will say, as sweet as your voice is and as soothing as it is, you like get it more than Gal Gadot did at any point in any of those films. I mean, you like get guttural. So why? I'm just saying, I recognize it. I'm a fan. Right. Look at me, Susan. I'm a fan.
So, Susan, I have two things. One is, how much do you change your voice to play this role versus the voice that people recognize as Wonder Woman?
So it's not so different than my speaking voice. It's a little bit lower in the register as I went on. When I first got the job in 2001, you know, I was really nervous, and I was working with a lot of heavy hitters who, while they hadn't done voiceover so much, they all had on-camera careers. I was the only one in the cast who only did voiceover. So it was a bit intimidating to walk into that room. And my voice, I think some of it was youth. I was much younger. And I think also just nerves. So you can hear it, it's in a higher register. But it wasn't like I had to change my voice altogether, like in some other jobs I've had where you'd really have to listen to know it was me.
Right.
It wouldn't jump out at you. I mean, most of the work I've done, I'm not one of those chameleons who can sound like a 7-year-old girl and, you know, and then I can sound like a moose and then I can sound, I'm not one of those voiceover actors. There are plenty of them out there who can change the voice into anything. That's not me. Mm-hmm. Most of the time I'm hired, it's because people like my speaking voice and want me to do a variation on it.
Right.
As the character.
Well, and leads to my next question, because obviously acting is a very competitive space and female actresses. I mean, I keep watching shows and the amount of Botox I see people putting in their faces on television. It's depressing. Mm-hmm. But as a voiceover actress, like, what do you feel like? I mean, you know, ageism, any of that stuff it can't be as prevalent, but you know, I imagine it's super competitive.
It is super competitive. It's always been competitive. It's always been, I think, you know, more than ageism, although I think that does exist. There's certainly more space to grow older in voiceover, but if there were to be a new Wonder Woman animated series, would I get it? Probably not. For two reasons. One, because I am older, and two, because I'm not a celebrity. That I think is the biggest bias. I think that there's a lot of stunt casting, a lot of, you know, it's sexy to have people who are famous doing these shows, doing these commercials. You get to meet them at the studio when they come in to record, and people love that. You know, people are, you know, they're infatuated with mm-hmm. actors and stars. So whether it's advertisers or it's just, you know, regular writer, producer, directors, people are enamored. So I think that's the harder piece, is seeing jobs go to better, you know, more well-known names. And sometimes those, by the way, it's not like, you know, they're talentless. A lot of those well-known names are extraordinary actors, and I have no beef with it, because the truth is, if I were famous and somebody was saying, hey, do this part and you will make this amount of money, I don't know any actor who's going to say no to that. You know, acting, right. No matter how famous you are, at some point you're going to be out of a job.
Right.
And mm-hmm. so I don't blame people, or I understand people wanting to make money. I mean, it's mm-hmm. the bottom line. But it's tough for people in the position I'm in, because if they do an animated movie, chances are they're not going to come to me. And even though the fans do know me or associate me with certain characters, I when they were doing an animated Wonder Woman movie, I desperately wanted to do it. And I went to my agent at the time mm-hmm. and said, you know, I want to be able to do the movie if there's a movie. And he very honestly looked at me and said, you will never get that movie. Nah. You know, you will never be hired for that movie.
But you did do the trailer. And how did that happen when you did the trailer for the Wonder Woman movie going on DirecTV?
You know, that was just because I had an audition for it. And I said to my agent at the time, you might want to mention to them who I am, because they might not hear it if I just do it in the promo. Mm-hmm. But you might want to mention it. And they did. My agent did. And that's how I got the job.
Right. That's amazing. I love that.
Can I ask a question? Because what is interesting to me now is, especially with Wonder Woman, and now what's certainly going to happen with He-Man, is that does it behoove you, or would you take it? I'm guessing you would, if some kind of on-screen camera, on-camera acting job came up, so that kind of reputation could build on itself. Oh, that's the woman who did this voice. And then that fan base grows with facial recognition as well. Like, would you do that? Would you pursue that, a TV show role, or are you just not interested in that at all?
I'm not interested in, and to be really frank, mm-hmm. you don't start at this age, at the age I'm at, like mm-hmm. there's a way to, I mean, not that there are rules and then all the rules go out the window. I mean, mm-hmm. we see that every day, right? With YouTube phenomenons, right. people have Instagram followers and they're on a TV show. And so things are constantly changing and evolving. But in terms of getting on television or getting movie roles, there's a, you can't just say, poof, I want to go do television. I want to start auditioning for, you're expected to have certain credits. You're expected mm-hmm. to have credits on your resume. Now I have those credits in voiceover, but I don't mm-hmm. have them for on camera. So for me to even be able to get into a room to audition
right.
would be almost impossible without the history. Having said that, I don't think it would help me unless I, walked into a Julia Roberts movie and was her playing her aunt. Right. I don't see that happening and I don't see it helping. The voiceover, I think, celebrity makes a big difference. It just does. And some of the voiceover actors are celebrities in their own right. But if you're at a certain level and there's a choice between hiring me or hiring a celebrity, they're going to go with celebrity, which is why, by the way, I love Kevin Smith, because Kevin, while he does have celebrities in the show, mm-hmm. he certainly could have cast Sorceress. I mean, Sarah Michelle Gellar plays my daughter.
Right.
Wow.
He certainly could have cast a number of big time actors for the role and they would have done it happily. So that's why I say it such gratitude, because.
Well, maybe he was a fan. He was probably a fan of when you were Wonder Woman. He would have been an adult, but.
But well, I think what happened, I met him in a green room at one of the Comic-Cons, and it was one of those things where, do I go over and introduce myself? Okay, I'll do it. And green rooms at Comic-Cons are like, the cafeteria in high school. Everything's very, there's like a hierarchy to it in terms of celebrity. So you have people who like are not well-known, like me in the green room. And then you have really huge film stars, right? So it runs the gamut. And when Kevin Smith walked in to grab some lunch with his daughter, there's all these like, gosh, 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 gosh. Oh my God, there's Kevin. Everyone's talking and everyone's excited because he walked into the room.
Right.
So, then it becomes like, do I bug him and introduce myself? So I decided to introduce myself and I went over and I said, Kevin, my name is Sue. He's like, I know who you are. I've seen every episode of the Justice League.
I told you, I knew it.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that he was a fan, but he certainly knew the show. And then, several months later, I got the call that I got the job on Masters of the Universe. So
there's a certain amount of clout that comes with that. And it's like,
yes.
See, you seem to have a great outlook and perspective on it. Cause you're right. If a certain actor comes around, how do you say no to it? But there's also gotta be a sense. I know I'm on the bottom rung on the ladder here, but like, so even in stand-up comedy, you're like, an actor comes in and he's like, I'm a comic now. And you're like, well, there's people who are working really hard at stand-up. And it's like, you're just getting on stage and saying you're a comic. It's not, the same thing. And I'm sure with all the years of work and study and grinding as a voiceover actor, for someone to just come along and be like, oh, you're a YouTube star with a ton of followers and you're going to be in this film is, could be annoying, but that's how I would feel about it.
It's frustrating. It is frustrating, but it's also the reality and, mm-hmm. It's a business and people want to make money. And if they feel that they can make more money and sell more tickets mm-hmm. or sell more DVDs or Blu-rays mm-hmm. or whatever, subscriptions to streaming services with a name, mm-hmm. They're going to go with that. There's not going to be any loyalty. The fans are exceedingly loyal.
Oh yeah. I mean, when they made the Justice League and didn't use the TV flash, I was very upset. And so was my daughter. But I wanted to ask you, because you have done a lot of, you've done commercial work. So why don't you name some of the commercials that you've done, but also would you consider on camera commercial work?
I did on camera commercial work and I auditioned for it for like the first couple of years of my career, back in the 90s, I guess. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't, it didn't come naturally to me at all. And I didn't do well with it. And at a certain point, it was like, okay, I don't think this is my calling. And it's so tough. I mean, commercial auditions are so hard. I mean, you're driving all over town, you know, you're, you know, with, you know, with the nurse uniform in the back in your trunk, and then, you know, the cop outfit also. I mean, and you're just changing your clothes and going from one place to another. And not that there isn't that with voiceover, but obviously you don't have to change your costume and you don't have to be on camera and put makeup on or any of that stuff. So I didn't have much success in it. It didn't feel like a good fit. And I don't miss it. Like, there's not one part of me. I love doing commercials for, with voiceover. It's how actors can make money. It used to be how actors could put their kids through college. If you booked a big national commercial that ran for 4 years, you could pay off your mortgage easy. That doesn't happen as much. They tend to change their VO talent quite a bit. They also change their commercials quite a bit. So you're not going to see that that loyalty to that VO actor as much as you used to. In fact, now you'll get an audition. They'll say, we'd like you to sound like this person who they hired. And you're just thinking, why aren't you using her again? Yeah. She's lovely. She's brilliant. Just hire her. But they want to change it up. You know, they want to try something different. So,
Well, I've been there.
Can you name some commercials you were in?
Oh, well, I joked before about Fancy Feast, but I did do Fancy Feast for a very long time. I did, you know, Kenmore. I've done Payway. I've done, oh God, I mean, Microsoft.
Wow.
Payless Shoes. I mean, just so many. I mean, quite a few. And again, because the way the industry has changed, I used to book a lot more commercials than I do now. It just used to be easier. There were a lot, not that it was ever easy to book, but there were so many fewer actors doing voiceover then, and the community was a lot smaller. Now everybody is a voiceover actor. No one knew what voiceover was when I'd say I was a voiceover actor.
Right.
Now everyone knows.
Don't they say, well, look, I mean, everyone knows. I mean, there's so many tutorials out there on which mic to buy and take this thing and fake it. I'm using a mic right now. It's better than anything I ever did have, but I just watched a few videos but it doesn't mean that I'm like trained in VO work. But they do. Don't they always say, this was what they always said to me coming up, was like, if you get into VO work, then they use you all the time because the casting directors get to know you and know you're reliable and they just call you in all the time. You're almost not even auditioning at times. Do you feel like that's truth or a little both?
I think for animation, that's true. Mm-hmm. And for video games, I think it's like a repertory. I think that a lot of the same actors work over and over in a lot of these video games and a lot of the animation work. I think commercial in LA, it's different than New York because New York, you go to the ad agency itself to audition. Mm-hmm. Whereas in LA, you go to a casting office to audition. So it's different. But I don't feel like there is, again, I think with commercial voiceover right now, it's like buying a lottery ticket. It's winning the lottery, to book a national commercial that's going to last. And
right.
Everywhere in the country, you can submit on voiceover now. It used to be Chicago, LA, and New York.
Right.
Those were the big towns for voiceover. Now, I mean, you can live in Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. You can live anywhere in this country. You can live in Austin and you can make a good living on a local level and perhaps even nationally, but certainly on a local level.
Well, and also back in the day when you started, it was still taboo for celebrities to do commercials in this country. And now everybody's doing them. I mean,
right. And
it used to be Japan or Europe, you would see like a George Clooney, but you would never see them here. And that's totally changed.
It was a little different for voiceover because people didn't necessarily recognize the voice, which it doesn't make sense in a way. Like, why would you hire somebody if their voice isn't unique enough to be recognized? But again, it's that infatuation we have with celebrity in this country. So if you're working at an ad agency and you know you're going to meet the celebrity, that's incentivizing for you in the ad agency, and you can introduce the celebrity to your client. And it's all very exciting and fabulous, right? So there was always celebrities doing voiceover, and it just has gotten larger and larger and larger in terms of the amount of celebrities doing it. But even when I first started, I remember going up for a part, and Ruby Dee, the extraordinary Ruby Dee, it was between me and her, and she got it, rightfully so. Right. So, I mean, there were always celebrities in there.
I heard one time a story at a casting director's office that, I forget who it was, but they said that like Donald Sutherland had like booked a job with them or something like that. Right. And it was supposed to be like some like hour long session. And he literally showed up and he's like, I'm going to read this 6 times. So make sure you record it, because that's it. I'm doing it 6 times and I'm leaving.
Must be nice.
That's clout. That's clout. Yeah, and, you know, I wish I could just do things for 6 times and then say, I'm out of here.
Right.
But no, it doesn't quite work like that.
I know. So is this, can I ask, you go, Brian.
Susan, we talked a little bit before about if you ever had a job that blew. But I also, if you don't, if there was ever a job that you really, really wish you would have got that maybe close, but no cigar, that's another segment that I came up with, because that's been my career, close, but no cigar. So
that's a great segment.
Yeah. If you've ever come close to something great, or if you've had a job that blew, love to hear either.
You know, the job that blew wasn't a bad job. I just sucked at it. It was, I was living on Cape Cod for the summer, and I got a waitressing job. And it was this really fabulous restaurant, but the problem was they did a really, really big, boozy, like lunch and dinner. Like, it was a big drinking place. So people would come in and they wouldn't order like a gin and tonic. They would order it like with the name of the gin. And I didn't know liquor. I just had no idea about the different boozes. Now, the interesting thing is that my family and I used to go to the restaurant all the time. We knew the owner, which is probably how I got the job. She was so lovely to me. And I just was so bad at the job. I didn't know when people asked for drinks, I didn't know what they were asking for. So I'd have to go to the bartender and ask him. And they just didn't have time to train me because it was the summer. They were busy. It was just horrible. I also had a job that did blow. And I worked for somebody very famous, and I can't say who they are, but I worked for them in their home. They were lovely, but their wife was a horror, and that job truly blew. I mean, that I lasted 2 weeks, and again, 2 weeks is my thing. And when I quit, I went to the man I was working for, who was lovely, and I said, I'm going to quit because I can't deal with this situation. And he said, listen, I can't believe you lasted 2 weeks.
Wow.
I can't believe you lasted for 2 weeks. So I mean, that blew. I wish I could tell you who it was, but I can't.
Wait, so what year was this? And was it the wife that made the job so awful?
Yes.
Wow. Was this in the 80s when you first got out there?
No. My first job, I worked for Charlie Fleischer, of all people. Charlie was the voice of Roger Rabbit.
Oh, wow.
He had a deal at Disney, and he was able, coming off of Roger Rabbit, he got a deal at Disney, and he, you know, got an office, a fancy office. And, you know, with that office came an assistant, and lo and behold, that was my job. That job did not, it was odd, but it didn't blow. But there were, you know, I worked as a temp when I first moved out here too. And that, I'm just not good at that. I'm not good at like having the phone call come in the morning and be like told, okay, you got to go. I need to like, I'm very zen about stuff. I need to kind of work my way into knowing that I'm going to be going and have it be like organic, not like, you know, 9 o'clock. Okay. You have 20 minutes to get to Burbank to work at Warner Brothers. So yeah, the temp stuff all blew. And even though some of the jobs were okay, it was just shitty. But there's no one I know who doesn't do what I do that didn't start out with a bunch of jobs that, you know, they had to make money. And then there you go. I mean, you just do what you have to do.
Can I ask a question? What?
Sure.
It's a tough question. You don't have to answer it, but what was it? 'Cause the acting world is very up and down. You've obviously had success at times. You've obviously not had to do or you didn't want to do the temping for so long, but what was there a low moment? Was there just like a, oh no, what do I do now moment, like throughout the acting career when you were already having started booking jobs? Was, and how did you get yourself out of it? If there was.
There definitely has been. I mean, I've been very lucky in that I've had incredible agents along my way. So I had people who believed in me. And so when my self-confidence would wane, I had somebody who wouldn't give up. You know, we're very reliant on auditions, right? So if you're getting your at-bats, even if you're not booking, you're just happy to have the at-bats. And, but no, definitely. And there are times where you just think, you know, why aren't I booking? Why aren't I working more? You know, but a lot of it's cyclical and things come around. And if you put, I always believe if you put yourself out there, something's going to come back for you. And, you know, I also tell people not to give up. I mean, people will say to me, I want to do voiceover, but I hear it's really competitive or really hard. And I say, well, if it's your passion and if you love it, then you must do it. I mean, you must try. You just must. And, you know, it's a very competitive field, but most fabulous things are competitive. And right.
If it's not hard, why it's not worth doing it.
You know, I mean, you're a stand-up, so you know. Yeah. I mean, what's harder than being a stand-up? I don't think anything's harder. I took a stand-up comedy class and I came out of that class thinking, yeah, maybe not.
Well, I'm about to take a VO workshop so I can get a better reel, because I have a decent like character reel, but
okay.
But like my commercials, I mean, I always say I sound so nasally, like unless it's like a commercial for like Sudafed, I have a very Nathan Lane path of success if I could get on that train. Remember he did those series of commercials where he was like, I can't breathe, you know, whatever.
Yeah, that's right.
I also did a Dunkin' Donuts commercial and begged the ad agency to make me the new Time to Make the Donuts guy.
That would have been perfect.
Oh my God, I begged them. But yeah, I mean, look, I hear what you're saying. It's about the at-bats. That's what I'm glad you said that, because it's something that people don't understand outside of this world, I think, is that it's about I'm taking swings and I'm in the game, you know, and that's a success, and I'm getting callbacks and that's a success. And
that's
when you're
huge.
Not getting that, that's when you're not doing well. But when you're in the game,
no, and it, you know, and you know, like when you get close and you don't, you know, like I've been on a veil for a lot of things and
sure.
You don't get them and it's depressing and it, you know, but my agent always says, hey, do you know how many women read for that? You know, right. And you got to, it was between you and one other person. I mean, right. 300 people read for that. 600 people read for that. I mean, the numbers are astounding of how many people are trying to get these jobs. So I try to stay positive. I don't always. And when I don't, I try not to stay there too long. I think that becomes, you know,
it's quicksand.
Yeah, it does. It's really a rabbit hole. And I think that if you stay there too long, you know, bad shit happens. I think you have to stay in the light. I mean, it sounds so corny, but, and I'm saying this for myself as much as for anybody listening, you just have to stay in the light. That's all.
Susan,
stay in the light.
Do you have children?
No, I have. I can't believe you can't hear him. My dog is here.
Right? Oh, I can hear him.
I thought you were
panting.
I wasn't sure if it was your dog or you were filing your nails.
I thought that too.
It was one of those two things.
No, my dog Oliver just came in from his walk with his dad, my tech partner, who's also my life partner.
So
he is breathing so heavy. So yes, that's who you're hearing right now.
Funny.
Well, yeah. we'll jump into our game now.
Okay. Okay.
I just want to reiterate the point she said for everyone listening. Stay in the light. You know, keep working hard, find a way to, if you get down, pull yourself up. And if you're in the light,
stay in the light. And also, you know, Josh, the other thing I would say is stay in your lane. Because I think one of the things that we do in life, and I'm guilty of this, or I do this as well, is you compare yourself, right, to other people and their successes. And
right.
I always think, you know, we have to just stay in our own lanes and just, you know, for better or for worse, like, just, this is your path, and your path is going to have ups and downs and highs and lows and all the cliches, but it's yours. And, right. you know, so stay in the light and stay in your lane.
Stay in the light, stay in the lane. Keep your lights on at night when you're driving.
Well, and the, okay. you know, with all the people that we've spoken to, we hear so much, you know, there's a lot of luck, you know, being in the right place at the right time. So all the more reason why you can't compare yourself to other people. It's just, you just never know what's presented to other people that hasn't been presented to you. It's not that you didn't work hard enough. It's, you know, so it's just,
and sometimes it's just about the fact that you have a relationship with somebody and they mm-hmm. know you. I mean, I've gotten plenty of jobs because somebody knew me and I knew them and I was a fan and they were a fan. And I mean, I've had people say, you know, I'd love to work with you. And then 3 weeks later, I'm getting a script. So the relationships matter hugely.
Hugely.
Yep. So, you know, don't burn those bridges, kids.
Yeah. I would like to say that I would like to double down on that as someone who has burned many bridges.
Yes.
So don't do that.
Yes.
But all right, let's play the game because this all has right. been an awesome conversation. And then, you know, Susan has to leave a voicemail on my phone as Wonder Woman. Okay. So we got to get going.
All right. So the game is called Hearing Voices. And I'm going to just name a few different shows and, you tell me the person. Okay. So to start, the Wonder Years narrator.
Oh gosh. It's Daniel, Stern.
Yep. Yes.
Isn't
good
it?
One.
Yep. Next.
And in fact, on one of the Justice League episodes, the two brothers from that show were on our show, Hawk and Dove. They played two characters, Hawk and Dove.
Oh,
and
funny.
I was sitting next to them, like they're in the studio, because we had incredible guest stars on our show. And there I am sitting next to Kevin. And it was just like Fred. And I was just, it was, you know, wow. really one of those moments in life where you're just like, this is my life.
Oh my God. I love that you have antidotes to go with these questions. Thank you. Because sometimes these games really fall flat.
Wait, Wonder Years, the first episode came out and he went to Hillcrest Elementary School and that's where I went. And I thought that was the first in my life. I was like, somebody's watching me and this is my life. I'm Kevin. I'm a 9-year-old in elementary school. Oh my God.
Okay.
That's so great.
The next one, Desperate Housewives.
You talking about the narrator?
Yes.
Oh God, Brenda Strong.
Oh, yeah.
Good job. All right.
Well, Brenda Strong, because you know, when you audition, and Brenda should know this, it would, you know, when I would audition for things, they would ask, the spec would be Brenda Strong. You know, she has, in fact, I did something recently where I just channeled her in Desperate Housewives because that, you know, that is very singular, that her delivery. And so I use it all, I steal it from her all the time.
She's always, to me, the episode of Seinfeld when she wore the bra on the street.
Oh, that's right.
Will always be Brenda Strong. Okay, Stand By Me, narrator.
Oh.
Mr. Holland's Opus.
Richard
Jaws,
Dreyfuss.
Yes. I'm like, Mr. Holland's Opus, Jaws.
No. yeah. And it was like Rob Reiner directed it. Richard Dreyfuss.
It's funny, when I was Joel Siegel's intern at Good Morning America, he told me how he went on a double date with Richard Dreyfuss. I have an antidote for Richard Dreyfuss. okay. The greatest voice actor of all time, according to IMDb.
Is probably, James Earl Jones.
He's on the list, but this person is a big cartoon voice.
He's done all the voices.
Okay. Don LaFontaine.
Nope. Starts with an M.
Like cartoon voices.
Yeah.
What's up, Dak?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Now. Oh,
that was a terrible Bugs Bunny, by the way.
It's MB.
No, I know who it is. oh, crap.
Mel.
Yeah, Blanc. Thank you. Yes, yeah. Thank you, Mel Blanc.
See, it's
Mel
so funny. Blanc. I would have said Blanc instead of butchering the A. So
you ever see his interview? Watch his YouTube interviews where he was on the talk shows and he would just do all the voices, all of them. All Daffy Duck, Bugs Bunny, Elmer Fudd. It's wild.
I know it's crazy. It's crazy the level of talent. I mean, I've been in a few rooms, not with Mel, obviously, but I've been in a few rooms where, you know, you're just astounded by the talent that's in the room. I mean, it's crazy.
Seth MacFarlane. Seth MacFarlane. He's so talented.
He is. Okay. Is there another one?
Yep. This one more. Is speaking of talent. Number 22 on Sci-Fi's top 25 VO actors of the last 25 years.
Come on, Susan Eisenberg. She did the voice of Wonder Woman in like all of the movies. Justice League.
Did you not know? I don't think I did. I mean, I think I remember something about a sci-fi list, but I don't remember it being like the top VO. I don't know.
Top 25 of the last 25 years, number 22. That's pretty damn impressive.
That's just silly. I mean, that's just silly.
And it's a field that is, it's a lot of men. So good on you, woman, for getting a spot.
Thank you. Yeah, no, a lot of the, you know, the women have really emerged. I mean, there used to be all the copy belonged to guys and now it's just not like that as much anymore, which is lovely. I mean, it's a lot of extraordinary women out there doing VO, a lot of extraordinary men too, but now the playing field's a little bit more equal, which is so important.
Right. Well, because when I searched like top VO of all time and the list with like Mel Blanc and James Earl Jones and Morgan Freeman, I mean, it took forever to find a woman on that list. So
I can see it.
Quick question. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? Worst HR question ever.
Oh God. I don't know. After this last year, I don't even know where I'll be in 5 years. I mean, honestly, I hope I'm healthy. I hope my family's healthy. I hope I'm working. And, you know, I just want everyone to be okay. That's all.
Awesome.
This last year was so traumatizing for everybody. I just want us all of us to be okay.
Well, if you're in VO, this year at least was less traumatizing than if you actually were like an actor.
That's
camera,
right.
You know, we're going to wrap it up, but tell us one more time, the latest project, Masters of the Universe, will be, it's in July. When will it be?
July 23rd on Netflix.
That's so exciting. Oh my God.
I am so excited. I just watched the whole trailer for it and everything the other day. I'm excited. I can't wait. I mean, He-Man with all this live action stuff and the fact that they're doing it as an animated, it's just going to be so great with all the voices. So bravo. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. And it was exciting because I was on the trailer and like, you know, that was like so unexpected and it's lucky. Like we talked about before.
Really study up on some of the lore. Cause once you start going to these Comic Cons again, they're going to start grilling you, all the fans and all of it.
There's
a feather headdress. There's like a, you know, she's got like one of these, she looks like a bird. The sorceress, like it's a whole thing.
Well, yeah, no, she's fabulous. I've done some research. When I first booked the job, I did some research and I will only be doing more as time goes on.
Are you doing a press tour or anything for it?
You know, we would have, I think, had COVID not hit, I think we would have done San Diego Comic-Con. I mean, I think it would have been there would have been a lot of fanfare around it.
Mm-hmm.
I did do some press. Netflix is going to have interviews with the cast after the episode airs. They'll be doing some live. I've already recorded it. So I think they had plans and then COVID came and erased everyone's plans. So I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, actors are always the last to know anyway.
Right. Well, what about October Comic-Con in New York? Do you think you'll be there?
Well, my first Comic-Con actually is going to be in my first live, you know, in person one is going to be in August in Connecticut. And then after that, I've got another one in Kentucky, but I don't know about New York yet. I haven't heard anything about that.
And are those for Wonder Woman or for this?
Wonder Woman.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. But also for this, I mean, you know, that's the thing. It's like your body of work. So, you know, it's for other things, you know, for other characters I've played also. You never know where your fan is going to be from. You know, you could have somebody who watched Jackie Chan and loved Jackie Chan, the animated series. So you just don't know.
Right. All right. Well, Susan, thank you so much. Thank you again for being here. Do you want to share any social channels?
Well, it's easy because I'm just Susan Eisenberg one for Instagram and Twitter. And if people want to know where I'm going to be, they can always go to my website, which is SusanEisenbergVoice.com.
Wow. All right.
Awesome.
And we're jobsbelowpodcast.com and at jobsbelowpodcast on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. I'm Bree Haas1. Josh.
I'm at Mr. Josh Hyman, and check out the website. We got all the episodes up there. You can listen directly from the website or Buzzsprout or anywhere you get your podcasts. We're on iHeartRadio, but really also check out the social media now, because Brianna, I got to say, you're kicking ass with all the memes and all the posting, and it's funny stuff. It's not just posting of the episodes. So check it out. Please like, share, review, subscribe, review, tell your friends. Did I say review? Review. We could use the reviews. I appreciate it. And we just love you guys and all the fans. Thank you so much. Susan, you want to send us off with like a Wonder Woman quote?
I'll meet you at the Watchtower.
I love that. That's it. I heard it. Awesome. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
Try to take a day off, try to have a semblance of a normal life, but you had to pick today to rob a bank. Oh yeah, like that's going to work.
Wait, please, I've learned my lesson, I promise!
No, you haven't. Your kind never learns, and it's really starting to get on my nerves.
Diana.
In a minute.
Diana!
I'm not finished here.
I'd say you are.
Fine.